Thursday Night Tailgate, where the spotlight is always on the positive. Tune in Thursday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time to hear your favorite NFL legends, players, and coaches sharing their stories. Now back to Chris and Bob.
I wouldn't joke about anything else that happened to you tonight.
All right, now back with us here on Thursday Night Tailgate is our next guest, Lifford Hobley. Let me remind you about Lifford's background. He's from Shreveport, Louisiana, played his college ball at LSU. He was a third-round draft pick by the Steelers in 1985, and he played in the NFL from 85 to 93 for the Rams and Dolphins as well. And over the course of his career, he had 5 interceptions, recovered 8 fumbles, and returned 2 of those for touchdowns. And we're excited he is back with us again tonight here on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, Lifford, Chris and Bob, thanks for coming back on the show.
Thank you, sir.
Hey, guys. How are you? Happy New Year.
we're fantastic. Happy New Year to you as well, Lifford. So how have you been? Catch us up. What's been going on?
It's been great. And I'm going to tell Rusty, hey, take 65 down to 99. Stay on 99 till you get to 5. I'll meet you in L.A.
That's exactly
how you get out of Pottersville. That's my territory. That's where I work. On a daily basis by phone, that entire area where he's living.
Wow, how about that?
Wow.
I knew exactly where he is.
So, Lifford, I got to get your thoughts, because as I was watching the national championship game and knowing you were going to be coming back on the show a few weeks later, a guy from LSU, right, now you're looking at a national championship game with Alabama and Georgia in it. Tough to watch for you?
No, it wasn't. Actually, you know what? I watched a game. I went to 4 LSU games this year. I saw a lot of LSU defense, really young, and I could see the ability of the team growing into a competitive team in the next couple of years. But to say that LSU would be competitive as they were this year, of course, lost the game that they should have lost. Got a wake-up call in the middle of the season for a homecoming to lose a game like that and then come back, snap back, and just make a run. And then, of course, lose kind of a heartbreaker. They were very competitive with Alabama. They had some opportunities just basically say that, hey, there's a coaching change that came at the end of the year to basically say we need to do something different. And it's unfortunate that there's 2 coaches that have actually been through there offensively, and we can't provide a perspective on a quarterback situation where we have all of these great receivers and specialists that have actually gone through there, and we've yet to have an answer at quarterback. The last time we had one was, Methenberg, who came in, but, he's been just exactly what he is. Basically a really good player, has a really good opportunity to do things when he's on the field, but he has limits. So LSU getting there was fun, but watching Alabama perform at the end of the season, and I felt like Nick Saban has done some things there that are just unbelievable with the respect I have for him as a coach. Also with the respect that I have for the assistants that have gone through there and for them to be as successful as they are. It's like the Belichick of college football. And, that's how I see Nick Saban. And, those guys are 2 really good friends, and they're pretty much cut from the same mold. So watching those guys work is amazing, to watch those 2 guys work and watch their players basically perform the way they perform at a level that they perform at. And to basically see other teams either go into Foxborough or go into Alabama and get chastised, because you very seldom see a defense of either Belichick or Saban make more than 2 to 3 mental errors a game. And that's based on how they teach. It's not watching the game, it's actually playing the game, and that's what both of them actually set in stone for their players.
So when you look ahead to next season for LSU, right? They open the season against Miami, then you've got Auburn a couple of weeks after that, and of course you got a game against Georgia, you got your game against Alabama. Are you confident going into next season? How do you feel about, you know, what they're going to do next year?
I think the spring is going to actually tell the tale offensively, how they'll actually come out, if the right quarterback or the right scheme is placed in place for these kids to be, you know, basically keep it simple and basically use the talent that you have that's available to you and not limit the amount of talent that needs to be on the field. If you have to go with three receivers, go with three receivers. If you have to throw the football 35 times a game, throw the football 35 times a game. The defense will win the game because LSU did not lose very much off the defense. And as you basically, if you watch them play against basically in the bowl game in Orlando, they actually played 80% were freshmen that were playing on both sides of the ball. And defensively, they played a lot of, basically a lot of underclassmen. Some of the guys opted out and they were all dressed, but they didn't get an opportunity to play because, Coach Ogeron wanted to see what he had for next year. And I thought that was great to actually operate that way. If you really don't want to play, you can dress, but you can stand over here and watch. I didn't have a problem with that because today I do have the respect of players opting out of bowl games if there's no significant value in the bowl game. But for the school, there is, because the school gave you an opportunity to be there on a scholarship. I really think if you're actually get an opportunity to play in a bowl game with your teammates in the last time, you know, play if you can. But if you're injured, or if you've been injured during the course of the season and you got an opportunity to go to the next level and make a living for yourself, opt out. I didn't think Geis would actually play because he had some injuries during the last year of his season. I thought it would have been a good opportunity for him to opt out. But he played and he got his point across and people got to see what Darius Geis really can do.
Five questions for Lifford.
Yes, Lifford, I was just speaking of kids coming out of college, and I was thinking of guys like yourself when I was watching the Saints play the Vikings, and of course, Marcus Williams and the missed tackle, and it brought me back to Lifford to fundamentals, and I have to ask a guy like yourself, an expert, about playing defensive back. Are these kids coming out of college? It seems like, to me anyway, tackling has become a lost art. It's more of a collision contact sport. And that play right there actually cost a team a trip to the championship game. And you can analyze it in different ways. But overall, Lifford, the kids coming out now, are they as fundamentally sound as you might have been back in the early 90s?
Well, you know, when I look and I watch the Seattle Seahawks put on a video, and you have a coach that has basically been in the NFL for many, many years, and, you know, as a head coach at Seattle, or having a practice session in certain times of the year on tackling, on form tackling, on tackling where it's going to be safe for you to tackle. If you didn't learn those techniques as a kid growing up and you're having an issue with going in a certain way or just going in with your shoulder. I saw a collision between Church and Drunkowski last Sunday. And,
right,
you know, basically, that over the past years wouldn't have been a penalty. But, yeah, the collision head-to-head, even though his head was up and he just basically banged his shoulder into his chest, but their heads banged together, that was a different way of hitting a big guy like that, you know, back, you know, I would say I would have actually came through him a different way with my shoulder and my arms wrapped around him, ripping through the football instead of actually just giving him one shoulder. I'm giving the entire body contact where it's safe for me and safe for him, but definitely still jarring the ball loose. So guys are still, I don't think the teaching, basically is being done with high school or middle school players, that actually that's effective for them to learn the best way to not injure yourself or basically possibly not injure the other player that you're actually trying to tackle. They've been limited to watching things happen on video games and other assets that they have to watch a football game. So, that, you know, that's been neglected for so many years. Protocol the way it is now, at every level from basically Pee Wee leagues all the way to the professional league, where everyone's talking about concussion syndrome and basically what's going on with that. And, I think teaching kids and also the college kids on how to perform and tackle is a very important. But to get back to the game where the play actually was developed and it didn't end with Mr. Williams, it actually started at the line of scrimmage where you're playing a defense. People, you know, usually you find guys that actually at corner that are actually the two of the deep guys where you're rushing three players, playing back there and knowing that, yeah, I would have probably been on a 37 defense with three defensive linemen and basically it's in the game where I know I'm protected, pass wise. I'm taking all of my linebackers out and I'm putting defensive backs in the game because I don't want a linebacker to be in a position where he's not used to running, you know, down the field with the receiver. I'm going to match up and put all the guys in the game that I need to match up with. And that's a 38 defense where I can actually count on those eight guys that I know that I work every day with as a defensive back coach that they're going to take care of their responsibility. I'm taking my linebackers out of the equation and never putting them in a position like that. And that was basically possibly an opportunity for, that's a coaching point for any NFL coach that actually see a situation like that to understand that defensive backs should be on the field, not linebackers in that situation.
And Lippert, Chris had mentioned the couple touchdowns you had in your own career back-to-back years, 87 and 88, as a member of the Dolphins. Do you remember both as clear as day, and do you still have the footballs?
You know what? My son has the footballs. Of course, the first one was against the Chiefs in 87. I actually creeped across the picket lines to go back and play during the strike season and basically had a really unbelievable game that week. And then, of course, to go out to Los Angeles and practice on top of the Marriott because there's a college game going on that weekend at the Coliseum. USC was playing that Saturday. We ended up playing a Sunday game and because we couldn't do our walkthrough. To basically score the first touchdown of the game, and we ended up kicking a couple of field goals, and I think Marino only threw one touchdown. So we snuck out of L.A. beating the Raiders for the first time in many, many years in Los Angeles, basically as the Dolphins actually would alternate between those two areas and play the Raiders maybe 1 or 2 years separation and get an opportunity to play out there, or even the Raiders coming to Miami. So getting, scoring a touchdown, and I think, I'm not sure if Rusty was, I think Rusty had moved on to Seattle by then in 1990. in 88, I think he was still there, but actually in Detroit. So we got an opportunity to, get an opportunity to score. I scored it down and, basically holding that lead and being able to beat the Raiders was very important to our season that year. We actually made it to the playoffs, got into a couple of games, and of course, I heard Tony talk about that the early years of the Patriots going in 85 to the Super Bowl against the Bears. I was actually in New Orleans after our season, my season with the St. Louis Cardinals after leaving Pittsburgh, and got an opportunity to watch the game. I didn't go to the game, but I was in New Orleans watching closely, and, you know, Tony was had a short stop over in Miami with me as a teammate and a great, great friend and a really good, awesome father and friend, and I love what he's doing, where he's located, and I wish him all the luck and the kids that he's actually providing source and resources for. It's a great, great thing he's doing up there.
So, Lifford, I got to ask you, as a guy who spent several years in Miami battling against the Patriots a couple times a year, are you rooting for them as, you know, since they're an AFC team, or do you look at it like, you know, boy, I would never root for a rival that that we played against like that to win a Super Bowl?
Well, guys, you know, Chris, Bob, to be honest with you, watching, now Doug Peterson was one of my teammates in Miami for many years as a teammate and a backup quarterback to Dan Marino, and for a few years. So I'm rooting for Doug a little bit, but Doug, I'm sorry, bro. I'm an AFC East guy.
Is that right?
People are like, you root for the Patriots? Well, I root for the AFC every time they play in the Super Bowl. That's why, you know. But you know, if there's ever the St. Louis, if ever the Cardinals are in the Super Bowl and they're not playing the Dolphins, I'm probably going to root for the Dolphins because I earned a paycheck with them as well.
And Lifford,
so the Cardinals ever
when you
the
played
Super Bowl, I will root for them.
When you played, you know, for the Dolphins, and when you were going up against some of those Patriots teams, now you were listed 6 foot, 207 pounds, so a pretty big guy for a defensive back. But you had to deal with a couple of Patriot tight ends and Lynn Dawson and Russ Francis. Both of those guys, you know, right around as, you know, as big as Gronk. I mean, you know, Russ Francis, 6'6", 240. What do you remember about going up against those two guys?
Well, you know, there was a difference. Back, you know, even now, it wasn't a difference. Those guys were just as physical, and you know, they just like Gronk, they used their weight and of course their balance to, you know, separate from. You basically have to put yourself in a position in between Grogan and the tight end, where if you know, like myself, fortunate for me, I was strong enough to maintain my balance and also stay away from the guys, and, you know, and having the speed as a safety that I had, of course, you know, being a 4-5 guy and being able to not worry about them running by me was a plus, and also being physical enough to, you know, keep them from pushing you off, and also being smart enough to know that you have to be smart. You can't, like I said, you can't watch the game. You got to be in it. And I spent a lot of time in the film room and studying what type of things that would go on in certain situations. So until I think Ben Coates, after I was injured, became a phenomenal tight end with the Patriots through the early 90s and on. And that kind of changed things for a lot of teams to go to tight ends like him, where he was one of those prototype guys that could run, catch the ball, and block. So playing against the Patriots, where I got my first sack against Grogan as a player, and then, of course, being able to play against Russ Francis and guys like that, and it teaches you a lot. And then, of course, you play against cagey guys in practice like Bruce Hardy, and, you know, you just learn a lot of things because Bruce was one of the smartest, and he is one of those tight ends that could run very fast, but he made you look silly because he'd get open on you in a heartbeat.
Lifford, before we let you go, remind our listeners what you're doing now.
I'm actually working for our organization, Walter Spluwer. Like I said, I work the West Coast. I provide services as a consultant to taxing accounting professionals, CPAs, enroll agents and tax preparers, accounting and auditing specialists. I've been in the industry for over 17 years, and I basically love what I do on a daily basis. I'm also the NFL Alumni Chapter President here in Dallas, Caring for Kids program. We are actually busy getting out in the community and helping kids and also our veterans that are actually disabled and also homeless. We have an initiative that we're working on with one of the huge restaurants here in the Dallas area to start an initiative here. I don't want to say anything about it because I don't want anybody else to steal their idea until we get it up and running. But this is going to be awesome, an awesome year for us to partner with an organization to help the homeless veterans, not only in Dallas, but in other areas of the country as well.
So, Lifford, how can our listeners stay up to date with all the things you're doing? Let us know. How can we follow you on online or over social media?
Well, we actually have a Facebook page for the NFLalumni.org. And if there's anything you need to know about what's going on in your area that the NFL alumni around the country are doing for kids, go to our NFLalumniwebsite.org and click on your chapter city, and you'll find out what our guys, who the presidents are, who's involved in your city, and basically go out and support the organization in a way that hasn't been done before. There's a lot of things going on that we're actually doing with the NFL through the NFL alumni, basically kids programs that they could take advantage of, not only in sports, but life examples as well.
It's really great stuff, Lifford. Thank you so much for taking time out of your night to come back on the show. When you're ready to announce something, I hope you'll let me know, and we'll get you back on because, you know, we've been partnering with the NFL Alumni Association for several years now. We're big supporters, and we know you guys do great stuff for kids and for the, you know, your peers as the alumni. So kudos to you and all the other chapter presidents for all the great stuff you're doing around the country.
Oh, thank you guys so much for having me on, and I love to come back, and let's go Patriots.
There you go.
All right, take care, Lifford. We'll catch up with you again real soon. In between now and then, all the best to you and your family.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
Good night.
Take care, Lifford. That's former LSU and Miami Dolphins defensive back Lifford Hobley. We've got our next guest, Mark Collins, hanging on the line. We're going to get to Mark right on the other side of this real quick station break.